Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Energy Speaks Back, powered by B2B Energy. My name is Paul Webb, and I'm the founder of B2B Energy, and I'm your host, and weekly I present to you energy experts from around the world. Welcome to episode 142. Our purpose, as always, is to provide a good understanding of energy management knowledge from around the world, which is available today for us to deliver savings that impact on our planet. We would like to thank utility people who are creating a better career and a future for people in our industry. Welcome, energy enthusiasts, to another enlightening episode of Energy Speaks Back. Today's guest is a gas and oil lawyer who is leading Nigeria to become more sustainable in more ways than one. So without any further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Sandra Osinachi Wandan. Good evening, Sandra. How are you today?
Good evening, Paul. I'm fine. I'm good. Great to be on your show.
It's a pleasure to see you. And obviously, it's amazing that you're in Nigeria, and with just that little bit time difference, because we're aligned with each other, aren't we, on the planet itself? So we can enjoy the same or similar time zones.
Yes. Not so far ahead, not so backwards. So it's perfect.
Brilliant. And we've met through LinkedIn.
And we've been
chatting on LinkedIn, and we've just had a little conversation offline. So thank you very much for sharing some of that information. So for the benefit of our audience today, can you give some background to yourself and your origin story to what brings you to this industry?
Okay. So, my name is Sandra. I'm actually a lawyer practicing in Nigeria. I've been practicing in Nigeria for about 11 years now. I was called to the Nigerian bar in 2012. And I've actually been an election petition lawyer since my call to the bar. I practiced as an election petition lawyer in some parts of Nigeria for about 9 years of my practice, but actually always loved the energy space because I felt like there was so much to do in that space. There was so much going on. For us in Nigeria, oil and gas makes up 85% of the Nigerian gross domestic product GDP. 85% of our GDP, 85% of Nigeria's revenue is from oil and gas.
Right.
And that means it's a very core sector of the Nigerian economy. It's a very determining sector. And looking around me at the time, I realized that Nigerians had so much resources, natural resources, but we weren't really channeling it in the right way. Mm-hmm. It's not being harnessed. And it was actually, and also the issue of the negative effects on the climate, where these oil and gas companies, especially the international oil and gas companies, the IOCs, come to Nigeria to exploit or to explore our natural resources and carry out their operations in a manner that, you know, may not be so efficient. Mm. So I felt there was something I needed to do, especially for somebody like me who comes from the they call it Niger Delta region of Nigeria. It's actually the oil producing region of Nigeria.
Right.
So I could see firsthand the negative effects that inefficiently exploring oil and gas costs to the people. Negative effects like black suits. There's always black suits. I mean, if you go to a place like Port Harcourt in the Niger Delta region where I lived for a number of years, you'd find that it's actually affecting their health, their breathing, and it's affecting even the reproductive system. I mean, there's a lot of metal components in the air that they breathe because of the exploration activities. Right. And also, apart from the IOCs, even the local explorers also do it without, you know, outside the regulations, outside the legal regulations. So seeing those things and the fact that there was poverty and the economy wasn't properly managed, even though we are so blessed, you know, Nigeria is actually first in Africa in terms of gas reserves, and we're about 10 globally, number 10 globally in terms of natural resources, but we weren't even getting, the returns from those resources. So I really wanted to, I was inquisitive to know why, what was the problem. I wanted to know where I could play, where I could make a difference, both environmentally, both economically, both for human impacts. So I decided to pivot. So I did a total pivot from my election petition practice. That was in 2020. And I decided to become an oil and gas lawyer, an oil and gas expert. So I started to build expertise. I actually went for my master's program where I did my master's in comparative oil and gas. That was my master's studies because I wanted to see. So during my studies, I compared countries like Norway, countries like Brazil, countries like the United Kingdom as well, to see how they explored their oil, how they did things in an efficient manner, and to see if we could, import it back to Nigeria, back to Africa as well, because it's an African problem, it's an African epidemic. So since then, I actually became a transactions lawyer. I used to be a dispute resolutions lawyer. We used to go to court and everything, but now I'm a transactions lawyer. When these companies want to set up their business, so we are the ones who give them the business structure. We advise them on compliance issues. For example, B2B is coming, B2B Energy is coming to Nigeria. We are going to give you the full advisory on your full value chain operations in Nigeria so that you can operate efficiently. You can be in the good books of the regulators. You can also be, contributing and also doing business in a way that doesn't have to affect the environment or the people. So basically, that has been my story, and it's been an interesting ride, a lot of learning and unlearning. So yeah, that's my story, Paul.
Interesting, you said
Thank you.
in the beginning about the IOCs coming across, and you mentioned the word not exploring, but you said exploiting. So originally they were exploiting this benefit for themselves rather than exploring.
Yes. Okay. Oh, okay. If you go back in history, into the history of oil and gas exploration in Nigeria, I think Shell was the very first company that was given a concession. Then it was a concessionary arrangements, unlike now where there's a production sharing contract. The government also has, a share in whatever is produced. So then it was just concession. So because basically that was so long ago, 1956, the 1960s, 1970s, Nigerians didn't have the expertise, and even our government didn't have the maybe financial wherewithal and also the expertise. So how it happened then, how licenses were given, was like in a concessionary, it was called the concessionary regime. So these licenses were just given to the IOCs, and the IOCs had there was no there were no checks actually. The IOCs could do whatever they liked, and they could get their production, and they paid the Nigerian government whatever production sharing revenue they wanted to pay. I mean, there was no measurements, there was nothing like laws guiding those activities. There were no obligations for them to explore in an environmentally friendly way. So there was a lot of, so I called it exploitation then. Unlike now, things have really changed
The
now,
balance
especially with
now.
the new government. Yes, things have really changed, especially with the new government. And there's been a technology transfer. So I will not just paint them in the bad light because they've also done their bits. They've also done a lot. While exploring, they've also tried to, there are laws guiding obligates them or requires the IOCs to transfer technology, to transfer expertise to the locals as they, do their own operations, as they carry out their own operations. So it's a good time to be in the industry, unlike in those days where things were a bit worse than this.
So are they now, is the IOCs bringing employment more to Nigeria now? So there's regulation around there to make sure that they have to employ X amount of Nigerian inhabitants.
Exactly. So there's the yeah, there's the local go there's Local Content Act, Nigerian Local Content Act. Yes. So the act provides like an obligation. It's a very important law in Nigeria. If you're a foreigner who wants to do business, aside the fact that you have to register a Nigerian company, maybe as a subsidiary of your parent's company in whatever foreign country, you have to ensure that a certain percentage of your employees, both in management level and the non-technical staff, have to be Nigerians. And in sourcing your equipment that you're going to use for your operations, carrying out your operations, they have to be sourced locally. They can only be sourced, from your foreign from foreigners if you're sure and it's been established that they cannot be found locally. So that has actually also helped our economy because it has also created employment. Like I said, technology transfer. So you now see Nigerian engineers, Nigerian geologists who have learned or also developed expertise in exploration and all that. That's why there's even the chance for what they call marginal field operations. Now Nigerian companies, as local companies, can now go into upstream operations, like the business of exploring this natural resources. Before, Nigerians never used to play in that space. So yeah, so there's the
And
there are good sides to
is this
it.
all mainland drilling? It's not sea drilling. It's all on the mainland, yeah?
Okay, so there's offshore and onshore, definitely. So
I
there's a
didn't
deep, yeah, so there's the deep water drilling as well, not just mainland drilling, but for the deep water drilling, the technology involved there is more, it's more extensive. So we hardly have locals playing in that space. So it's usually just the IOCs that play in that space. And lately as well, because of the Paris Agreement to limit methane emissions, to reduce them, to decrease them, global warming to not more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. By 2050, I think that's what the International Energy Agency says. By 2050, so a lot of the IOCs are even divesting their investments on the offshore operations. So they're divesting it to Nigerian companies, usually Nigerian consortiums who come together to take those assets. So these IOCs are now going deep water. So just to answer your question, they're now going offshore. They're going into the water to explore there. So it's less environmentally damaging, and because of the ESG issues as well.
I'm going to ask a question. You mentioned when you was doing all your research and your studying, when you was doing your master's, you mentioned about other countries. You studied other countries to learn what everyone was doing. Who would come out sort of on top there? Who's the leading countries that were showing the most effective and efficient ways of drilling? Was there anyone that stood out?
Yes. I actually enjoyed studying about Norway. I enjoyed everywhere, including the UK. But oil and gas is really not your mainstay in the UK. Oil and gas is just one of the sources of revenue. So I actually studied Norway a lot, who actually have very dependent on, on the industry. So Norway actually have been able to grow their industry from what we have just in Nigeria to something very powerful. They were able to privatize their national oil company. I think that's Equinox. It used to be Statoil, now Equinox. So they were able to, yes, privatize their company, making it national oil company, making it more efficient. And I realized that they also, the government, the Norwegian government, also backed its private sector, the private oil and gas sector, backed it with a lot of financial assistance, Because the private sector, they will always have a problem of financing. So a lot of these oil and gas companies, local oil and gas companies, want to go into the business of gas, especially because Nigeria is actually in the decade of gas right now. So there's a lot of talk, a lot of legislation surrounding gas, but most of the time they're limited by they're technically and financially limited. So it would be great for the Nigerian government to, come in and back them up, just like the Norwegian government did. So the Norwegian government gave these private sectors a lot of incentives. So tax incentives, basically, tax incentives, funding on very low interest rates, and but just a lot of assistance. And before you know, these local companies gained so much expertise, and they took over a lot of the portfolios of the IOCs, of the foreign companies who used to come to Norway to, carry out operations. And I actually recommended, when I wrote my papers, my dissertation, my research work, I did a lot of recommendation looking at their laws, looking at what the government have done in Norway, looking at their oil company in Norway as well. And I brought it down to Nigeria, policy wise, legislation, regulation wise, agency wise, how Nigeria can also, tap into those laws, those regulations, those policies to make oil sector a lot better. Because, like I said, it's the main source of revenue. I mean, I don't know if you know a lot about Nigeria, but we have a lot of gas. Nigeria has about 208 trillion, cubic feet of gas. And there's still a lot of reserves not even discovered yet.
Right.
And gas is less environmentally damaging than other kinds of fossil fuels like coal, like oil. So it would be nice if the governments are able to support local investors to invest in maybe liquefied natural gas plants, invest in good gas networks so that players can play in the full value chain, because infrastructure is actually a big problem. Financing is a big problem. The world is talking about transitioning. So transitioning is what is on the lips of most of the advanced countries, the G20 countries. So you see that the World Bank, most of the international financiers actually not looking the way of oil and gas anymore. Like I said, even the IOCs are divesting their portfolios. So it would be a good time for the government to come in and back these operators, both financially, with good regulations, good tax incentives, and things like that.
So I want to sort of touch on, so when I look to your profile, you're an environmentalist as well, and you've got this
Yes.
conflict going on here, haven't you? You've got oil and gas in your portfolio, and then you've got the environmental side of it. Tell me how you bring those together, because you mentioned that on off air just now.
Yeah, so I knew you were going to ask that, considering the fact that you're from the UK and everyone is just saying, let's move away from fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are very polluting and all that. Okay, so for us in Nigeria, we want to transition. All right, we want to transition away from oil and gas, and we want to transition away, but it's not as easy
No,
as
of
the
course it isn't.
advanced countries.
No.
Yes, it's not as easy because, like I said, oil and gas is our mainstay. Yes, we want to do renewable energy. We have laws on that already. I've written some papers on the new laws that were just passed encouraging renewable energy development. But you see, if we're talking about the full spectrum of sources of energy, talking about fossil fuels, fossil fuel has oil, fossil fuel has coal, and then fossil fuel has gas. But of these three elements, gas is the least polluting. Gas, yes, operating in the gas industry, you realize that gas produces less methane emissions than coal. Coal is so polluting than coal, than oil. That is why the Nigerian government haven't realized this, have declared this decade, that's between 2020 and 2030, as the decade of gas. So even though I'm an environmentalist, I'm still a realist. I realize that even though the rest of the world is moving away from fossil fuels, transitioning from fossil fuels, the continent, other parts of the continent like Africa, have to realize that we're not on the same level. We're not, I mean, there's what they call the equitable transition, right? So equitable transition says that every country or every continent moves at its own level. So equitably, Africa isn't ready to transition away from its natural resources. So instead of transitioning just immediately, Nigerian government is saying that, oh, let us transition using gas. It is still a transition, but we're transitioning from a more polluting source of energy, which is coal and oil, to a less, much less polluting source of energy. Now, I'm taking that from an equitable angle because I'm still going to tell you why. Because when you look at the countries who cause majority of the pollution, Africa just accounts for about 3% of the global pollution. 3%. Yes, just 3%. And we have other countries that I'm not going to mention them right now, but you know, there are other more industrialized countries. Pollution is more where there's a lot of industrialization. So Africa is not that industrialized. That is why we account for just 3%. But that doesn't change the fact that we're still vulnerable to this climate change, to the negative effects of climate change, like droughts and flooding and all that. So what I'm trying to say is, if we're contributing just 3%, it will be rather unfair to ask us to just transition just like that. I mean, we do not even have the equipment to do that automatically. So it's going to be a gradual process. So Africa is still going to transition. Nigeria is going to transition completely to renewable energy, but it's going to be a gradual process. So for now, we're saying let us use what we have to get to where we want to go. So let us use gas. So if you look at my profile, you realize that I have a blog. I run a blog. It's called the SON Energy Digest. So my blog is basically dedicated to preferring practical solutions, compliance solutions to gas, upstream gas companies, that's exploration and production gas companies who are coming to Nigeria, who are operating already in Nigeria, telling them how they can, for example, what we're talking about, their regulations on methane emissions abatements. So how they can follow these regulations, get their metering rights, get their reporting rights, get their emissions data reporting rights. And you know how they can basically carry out the day-to-day operations within the ambit of the law and also causing less emissions on the environment. So yeah, that's where those two come together, being an environmentalist and being an oil and gas lawyer, because I'm an African, so
I like the way
I
you
have to take
said.
it from this angle.
I get that. I like the way you said a realistic approach. You know, to go from one to the others, that's a very big step. And as you said, it's only going to impact on 3%. So, you know, yes, every country needs to do their bit, but it needs to be a realistic approach to doing that. And you know, I think going forward, gas still has a place within the environmental sort of reduction, because what we can do long term is probably mix natural gas with biomass to help it, you know, transfer. So I think really we need to put that into the mix, like we need to put nuclear into the mix. We need to put solar into the mix. You know, oil and the big heavy hitters regarding coal and oil, they're the ones we need to transition away from, and that's what you're appearing to do. And I think that's the right thing to be doing. What do you think the challenges are for that, regarding those that transition? Where do you think the challenges are Is the IOC still wanting to, are they fighting this position?
Position of transitioning from in Africa, in Nigeria? Well, they're not fighting it. So it's just a matter of it's a matter of is it the organizations these IOCs belong? So some of them are members of the EU, some of them are members of the UN. And I know that there are laws in those organizations concerning these, and there are also sanctions. Some of them even go as much as giving some of these companies sanctions. So I think the IOCs, they're not really fighting, but they're trying to be careful. So they don't want to lose their investments. And so if I'm going to get sanctioned for doing this, then maybe I should just move my portfolio to something cleaner or something less polluting. So they're not completely abandoning the operations in Nigeria, but they're moving it deep water. They're moving it offshore. So they're also having a lot of challenges onshore. It's not just the ESG issues. So there are issues of insecurity as well. So I'm putting it out there. So there are issues of insecurity. So the communities where they call them the host communities. So the communities where these resources are found, some of them feel neglected. So they feel like they're not getting as much as they should be getting. So sometimes there's insecurity issues, there's sabotage. So the IOCs, I think they've weighed it. Is it economical? Is it safe? Is it ESG compliance? So after weighing these things, I think it's just these are just business decisions, not necessarily fighting the transition, just business decisions.
And do you have in Nigeria, do you have power stations that rely on the oil or the gas? Or in within
Yes.
what
Yes, so
what's the level of what's the percentages? Do you have coal, oil and gas power stations? Is there would you know that percentage across the estate?
yes, I can speak to that to an extent. So 60% of power generation in Nigeria is from gas. So it's called gas to power. It's called gas to power. So more than 60%, 60% would just be putting it lightly, actually. So more than 60% of Nigeria's electricity is powered by gas plants. So this is another reason why gas is so important to us. Gas is extremely important to Nigerians because there's a problem right now of power failure. I'm sure where you are, you can never experience power failure.
No.
I mean, except
It's very, very
for,
limited here.
yes, very limited, I can imagine. But it's just okay, right now I'm using my batteries to power my households because there's no light from the grid. There's no light from the grid. So in other countries you have a lot of supply of electricity, the kilowatts. But unfortunately, in Nigeria, we have just stifling productivity because Nigeria has very low so our demand and the access demand and supply is not balanced. The demand is a lot more than the supply. So this is also affected by the supply of gas. So we have gas to power plants, but when there is no supply of gas from the producers as a result of lack of infrastructure, lack of good policies, lack of investments in gas production, the power companies, the distribution power distribution companies can also not have access to this gas to power the gas plants, to power electricity. So it's just really a dilemma because without energy, energy is life.
Yeah, of course it is.
Energy is so important. I mean, without light, I can't power my laptop, for example. I can't work at night. I can't work even during the day. I can't power my fridge. Businesses can't run. So right now, there's even kind of a minor crisis in Nigeria where businesses are threatening to shut down because of the very poor power situation. A very poor power situation. So businesses have to pay so much for generators to power their homes, their businesses, and that's so much money. You know how much oil costs these days. You know how much these petroleum products, hydrocarbons cost these days. So it's actually a sad tale. So it's gas to electricity. So without gas, we wouldn't even have electricity. And without electricity, there cannot be economic developments. It's that important, basically.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Is gas expensive commodity to buy?
Yes.
It is expensive, even though you create
Yes.
it yourself.
Exactly. So that's my point. So that's exactly my point. You know, I
Right.
started by saying that Nigeria is ranks as the first country with the highest gas reserves in Africa. We have about 208 trillion cubic feet of gas,
Right.
proven gas, and there's still about 600, you know, trillion cubic feet of gas unproven. So cumulatively, Nigeria has a lot of gas, and what we are just 10 in 10 globally, number 10 globally, just behind, I think, Russia, maybe Russia, Iran, and some other countries. But unfortunately, we are still behind countries like Algeria, Egypt, when it comes to gas production, because of these same issues I talked about. Our local companies are not strong enough to invest in gas developments. Now, gas development is very cost intensive. The infrastructure required to get gas from the ground to the refineries or to the gas plants requires a lot of money, financial investments. And the reason I say Nigeria is in a dilemma is because international financiers are actually shying away. They are backing out from this because of where we are globally. You know, the climate change, clamor for climate change, and all that, the race towards climate friendly, you know, operations. So this is why we just need to keep advising the government on policy, on regulations, on how to attract investors and how to encourage local investors as well.
Yeah. But things have got better from day one. You're constantly going forward, and there's light at the end of the tunnel for what you're trying to achieve here, isn't there? People like
Yes,
yourself have
there's light
been,
at
if you don't mind me saying, that
the
people like yourself have become educated around this subject and you're passionate about it. You're not the first lawyer I've spoken to from Nigeria. You're not the first graduate as such. That I know that there's many, many people in Nigeria that are very well educated around the energy sector as such. And that's very positive to hear, I think. During
Yes.
lockdown, I had loads of people from Nigeria talking to me, educated in this field. Have you traveled at all with what you've done?
No, not yet. I
Right.
haven't traveled, so it's just in Nigeria, but I hope to, but not yet. I've attended
You've got
webinars
such a big
just
job
like
to
this.
you've got a big job to do in Nigeria, so you can't afford to, because you're passionate about your country first, and then once you've got it sorted,
Yes.
then you can travel, yeah?
Yes, but I can travel for conferences. I can travel for maybe to deliver papers, but
Yeah.
yeah, I feel like there's a lot to do in Nigeria. There's a lot to do in Nigeria.
What is your feeling about the climate change sort of area? Do you think there's a lot of work to do to stop climate change or slow climate change down?
Yes, there is a lot of work, but it's one step at a time. You know, the COP28 just ended. So I followed a lot of the conversations, and I was actually enlightened because I actually felt it was just climate change, the race towards emissions-free glow was just going to be in the energy sector. But no, it was not just in the oil and gas sector. It was not just in the energy sector. It was also agricultural sector. So we have countries talking about growing rice, growing grains in an agriculture in a climate friendly agricultural way. Now there's going to be something like labeled products. So products that are is it ESG compliance that are going to be labeled and sold more expensive than products that are not ESG compliance in order to incentivize the farmers. So it's in that sector, it's in other sectors. So it's a whole lot of work, I'm going to say that, because even with the whole will I say crisis in some countries like Russia, Ukraine, you can see how important oil and gas still is. So there's a whole lot of work for everyone to do. Yes, you can see there's also a lot of hypocrisy. So some countries are saying, oh, let us just transition immediately, let's just do it immediately. But you still see them granting oil exploration licenses in their countries. I mean, these are advanced countries, but you want Africa to do it overnight. It's not going to be an overnight journey. So it's just one step at a time. So the International Energy Agency is looking at 2060. It is achievable if all the governments can just do act responsibly, do their own bits. I think countries now have nationally determined contributions. So just have a plan. Like in Nigeria, we have the Nigerian Energy Transition Plan. So we updated the plan in 2022. It was originally called up in 2021 and updated in 2022. So the plan says that organically, we're going to try to reduce emissions in the cooking sector, in the industrial, in transportation sector, in industrial sector, in the I think production sector as well. So countries just have to do what they can as regards their nationally determined contributions to contribute to the fight against climate change. It's a sad reality, really. I mean, countries are going through a lot, people are going through a lot, even in Africa. I told you Africa is most vulnerable because they are considered as being poorer. So whatever heat we get is going to affect us even greater than the foreign countries. So
So Sandra, it's really an interesting story, this, and I love the way that you're attacking it from the gas and oil side. It's a very interesting concept. I was confused and I had to interview you, so thank you for coming today. But it's come to that stage where I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot regarding this. Is there anything that you can give back to our audience today as a takeaway, as an idea of what we should be thinking?
okay. Yes. Well, like I said, every country is at a different level when it comes to the story of transition. But do your own bits. Do your own bit. It starts from you. Yes, you want your country to transition. You want a better climate. So sustainability is taking care of the present so that the future can enjoy, taking care of our resources in the present to create a better future for the generations ahead of us. So whenever you think of the generations ahead of you, you need to be conscious of whatever activity you're doing that is destroying the climate. I mean, think about your children, think about your great-grandchildren, think about the future generations. You need to care enough about humanity. So when you have humanity in mind, I mean, you're going to be more conscious about the little actions. It's in the little actions. It's in your light bulb. Yeah, I think I heard you talk about the light bulb. I hear you on your program talk about every weekend you remind us to be energy efficient. to put up the lights in our offices, to put up the lights in our homes, to ensure we conserve energy. That's amazing, Paul. So those are little things you can do. Those are little things I can do. So it's just, we all need each other.
Fantastic. And you know, I believe that if everyone does just one thing every day, just think about that impact that's going to make over and over again, significant.
Amazing.
It would make a significant difference if everyone just said, right, now I'm going to go and turn one light off. And if everyone did that, what an amazing impact. It would probably put all the oil and gas companies out of business because there won't be no demand. But it's a very simple thing for everyone to do. I just wish we could communicate that. I'm sure we could one day, but it'd be interesting. That was one of my dreams anyway. It would be amazing. But yeah,
Amazing.
51% to make the biggest significance in the future. I really like what you're saying there. And everyone's got their own accountability, haven't they, for their countries? And I like the way you explained Nigeria's equity approach. Is it equity? What did you say? Equality?
Equitable
Equitable. Yes.
approach,
Yeah, the
putting everyone
equitable.
into consideration.
Yes. And I like that. That's amazing. Sandra, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for joining me sort of at this time. I know you've just got home from work and you wasn't prepared
Yes.
to come on to camera. You didn't know, oh, I've got to go on camera. I've got to go and do my hair and my face because you'd already taken, you're in home time now, aren't you? You're just relaxed and
Yes,
chilling.
I am. Absolutely.
Well,
Thank
you've been amazing. Thank you very much again. We will speak to you again, but please, you and your family stay safe in these times.
Yes, I will. Thank you so much, Paul. And thank you, B2B Energy Speaks Back, for everything you're doing. I see you. I think I was wishing you happy birthday on Rita's page on LinkedIn. Yeah, that's where you got me.
Brilliant.
I
Thank
was
you.
wishing you happy birthday. I was really admiring all the work you do. And I was so surprised when you reached out. It was amazing. And coincidentally, you said, come on my show. And I was excited. And thank you for the honor. Thank you. I really do appreciate it. And thank you to the B2B team. You're doing a great job.
Thank
Just
you.
keep up. Keep it up.
Thank you very much.